This is what Adam Rutherford's books do better than anyone else. And most diagrams come from his works. As you go down this passage, this pointing to my left, right side of the screen as you look at it, you're right here, folks, if you're listening on FM. Leading to the passage, leave me enough of this. Don't zoom in so close. I don't want the picture framed. Leave me some room right there. This leads all the way out of the picture to the entrance. In short, the pyramid would look like it does up here. This is but a blow-up of that passage. Now come back down to the lower passage. Coming into the entrance of the pyramid, somewhere out of the picture, you go into the pyramid down to the scored lines. That's 20. I'm writing upside down, so help me, folks. 21, 41. How do you do an upside down four? You turn the book around and you do it like that. 21, 41 is identified by the scored lines right there. Now, the lines that mark this passage have a different angle to them. All of a sudden, and only here, on both sides of the passage, are two lines, by scored, that means they were scored into it, marked into it, cut into it. And they are perpendicular to the floor line in contrast with other markings. This makes them stand out. And those scored lines perpendicular to the passage, followed all the way out, are going to hit the Pleiades, a certain star, as the passage, dead center in the passage, followed all the way out, will hit Alpha Draconis. Do you know what constellation Draconis is in? You don't know? Oh, no. Polaris is the star that's in the constellation you see now. What? Taurus? How many believe Taurus? Two? Three? Four? What are you, chickens? Well, we'll see. The Pleiades here, we're asking, is this one Taurus? But it's Alpha Draconis. Now, the scored line, you got the picture of the scored lines, the way they're picked out as you go down the passage, they stand out because they are perpendicular, whereas other lines are a different direction. Likewise, up here you have the close-up of the entrance. Originally, the Arab who broke in couldn't find it. There was a door that opened up, a secret door on the limestone that covered the face of it that was ripped off by the Arabs earlier. That limestone door would lift upward to give you your entrance. Now, they have to project that entrance outward now. And to get a picture of that, Rutherford has another blow-up accordingly. Zoom in close enough that I can read it. There is a great basement sheet, very well and placed here. And they are able to measure off the pyramid inches to certain key lines of triangulation, and they're able to calculate from this sheet exactly where the entrance was, though that much is now not existing. But they're able to determine that from what does exist, there's 123.9845 pyramid inches now missing to go to the true entrance as it was. So they've got it calculated to a hair. And when they talk about going back from the scored lines to the point of entrance, it's this theoretical, but it is actual, entrance point, not the actual entrance point you'd see if we climb up there and try to go in today. It's the entrance that was designed and the true entrance before the slab limestone coverings were ripped off to destroy the true entrance and let it wear away. For example, in the King's Chamber, the coffer has been mutilated as people take chunks. You can tell what it was, but it's not that way now. Man is chipping away at it, but it can still be determined where that exact point is. Now let that settle in, then I want to read something to you. Am I going too heavy with us tonight? Folks on satellite and syndication, they just have to digest an hour, and then we come back a week later, and I leave them hanging in thin air. You folks, I just keep plowing, because those that listen on Channel 30 in Los Angeles, Channel 38 in San Francisco, KHUF FM 99.5 in Los Angeles, and Channel 18 in Hartford, they hear me 24 hours a day. In fact, people see me in stores around Los Angeles, they think I'm a rerun. But if you are listening on Channel 9 or one of the satellite cable network companies, you just got to wait a week and digest it an hour at a time. For those listening live, that's kind of a subtle hint to those that are in the Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New England areas where you can tune on, get it live every night. Just about every night. I give you big doses, 2 and 3 hours at a time. Do you understand what I'm doing tonight? I'm trying to give you a feel, just a feel, really, for a benchmark and the way you work back and forth from it. I'll come at it 70 different ways, until the point of departure is there. Then we can start doing our own checking instead of being the victim of various people trying to prove private prophetic theories. I've told you there are thousands of books written by the historicists in prophecy that believe that everything that Daniel had to say and the book of Revelation had to say already has happened. And they write about the errors of the futurists and try to locate some dummy in the Middle Ages that came up with the idea first. Well, you ought to figure out, I ought to take you to my doctoral class in statistics at Stanford University, where we were amazed by Dr. Coladarchi as he talked to some people who were absolute insane idiots in asylums that were mathematical geniuses. It doesn't take anything away from the truth of their particular genius. Don't argue to the man, argue to the facts. And then the futurists will write books on the heresy of the historicists. And neither one of them can get it in their head. There's truth in both. And if they'd bend a little, they could find the point that doesn't box God in. It's like the Calvinists and the Arminians. Each of them trying to prove one end of the spectrum that God's got everything mapped out with no deviations. Well, you can put a good jockey on a horse and have a track he's running in. Neither the horse nor the jockey are going to run through the stands or jump the fence and go across the area in the middle. They stay between the fences. But those that have seen a horse race or two, God forbid, those that have seen a horse race or two on TV have noted that occasionally a horse can turn within the path. There's some play in the reins. You don't have to lose. Some people's view of theology is that if the horse turns his head, God lost control. I hate to make God analogous to a jockey, but in that sense, he is. He controls history, but he leaves some play because of his own value placed on freedom, which he gave. When he created man, he turned a monster loose, freedom. He keeps it in control, but without it, he wouldn't get the high value he seeks, which is love. Now, the pyramid fixes the points of the reins of God, as God's prophecy in Bible does that. Now, the Calvinists, they find the illustrations where God controls everybody, like knocking Paul down on the road to Damascus. And the Arminians find the area where freedom is seen. Well, they're both right. God's free to grab one guy by the nape of the neck and shake him, and with another guy, let him sort of wander around a little bit so he can teach him something. And he does treat different people differently. Christianity teaches individuality, but that's a side road. I'm giving you a feel so you can write some figures down. We'll check up on this guy. And I've told you, as the passage turns upward, we start dealing with the Exodus of the Israelites. From that point of intersection, drop your camera down to the lower picture and you'll see how you determine. Now, some people will work their private prophetic theories by counting their inches this way, and if it doesn't work out, they'll angle them up and start here again so they come out right. I mean, if you want to count your inches anywhere in between these and just move it around, if you've got a three-year error somewhere that doesn't support your particular prophetic view, then you say, well, right here we're going to do a slow curve and start counting right there in the middle of the passage. If you do it accurately, the inches are only so long and the lines intersect at precise points. Now, the floor line of the ascending passage intersects the floor line of the descending passage right there. And as it moves up here, and this floor line starts right there. This is 59.5 inches from here to here. And that brings us to 1453 B.C., period, right there. Here it is blown up on the higher mark. And that point, and I'll show you why we take this one and not this one. Rutherford spends hours, go back to the lower one, sorry, cameraman. Rutherford spends hours on what he calls the high or the low, the high versus the low departure from Egypt. You got to choose, did they leave Egypt here or here? Because only so many inches to there and so many inches to here. Now, if you're trying to simplify the pyramid theory, you just draw a line and a line. But when you get down to fine-tooling the inches, you're on the floor, and the floor lines intersect here. If that's the point where they left Egypt, that's the low theory. If that's the point, that's the high theory. Rutherford takes the high theory. He counts the inches to here, and up to here, and right on up from that point to the point where the Grand Gallery lifts itself 286 inches is exactly 1485 pyramid, not quite. There is a fine tooling of those inches, but he figures 1485 pyramid inches, or 1485 years from here to here. Now, those are the fine toolings that he does in each of these chambers. If you want to get a picture of how the Grand Gallery opens up, at AD 33, on the inch to a year margin, this passage that you have to stoop to walk up, that is the one that brought them from the granite plug right on up, the ascending passage of the Exodus out of Egypt to AD 33. At that point, the Grand Gallery, in seven tiers, lifts 286.1 pyramid inches and becomes the Grand Gallery. And that 286.1 pyramid inches is a very important figure. I got some pictures to show you while we're sort of fooling around. You interested? You know, I showed you pictures of bats flying and all that kind of stuff. That's enough to scare you into not going. I want you to not be so scared to go with me to the pyramid. I want to show you some pictures that shows you how well lighted it is. When you come to the ascending passage, well, here we are, from the Grand Gallery. Let's see if I can find the picture I just showed you. From the Grand Gallery, well, I just showed it to you. Let's hunt that one up again. From the Grand Gallery that raised 286 inches. We're in it now, past 33 A.D. Turn around and look back down the ascending passage that you just came up, and it will look like this. You're standing in the Grand Gallery looking back the way you've traversed. I'll let them work on the lighting until that comes out a little clearer. Don't zoom in. Give me the whole picture. Don't frame it yourself. Just back off until you get the pictures it's framed in the book. Try to... can you improve the color any, Joe, or can I tilt it? Will it help? Give me some instructions.
We're working on it. It looks pretty good right now. We just need to bring it out.
Now, as you can see, if you look on the sides of the picture, you'll see the tears that I showed you, seven tears that lifts upward. It's well lighted, as you can see. And when you get down in this portion of the picture, the ceiling dropped, and that's, you got to stoop. You just came out of that walking upward. But when you're going back, you got to stoop to get into that little gallery. That's the first ascending passage, and you'll stoop your way back down until you get into the first descending passage, which is the one Draconis shines down. If you want to look up, once you've come out of the lower stooped over portion and are moving upward toward the great step, where you'll go level to the king's chamber, this is the way it looks. You're looking up toward the great step. You can see it's rather easy to walk because you've got the ramps and the rails on the right and the little steps as you go up. There are no bats flying. It's the Egyptian tourist agencies made it very easy to make the trip. And yet you can still pretty much determine and mark off. Now, if you're looking down through the Grand Gallery from further up, the way we looked in the first picture, toward the end of it where you'd have to stoop going back down to go into the Hall of Truth and bent over position, the March of the Jews prior to AD 33, you're up near the Grand Step right there, or the Great Step, looking back down the Grand Gallery. Got that picture? Isn't this interesting? I mean, I like pictures. They say more than 1,000 words. Here's the, at the time he wrote it, this is what the entrance looked like. That's present entrance to the Great Pyramid, barred up by the Egyptian authorities at the time he took that picture. Got one more picture to show you. Here is some guy examining masonry in the upper part of the descending passage. So you can see it doesn't look like the Grand Gallery, but it's not that bad. You have to stoop over a bit to go, and the dust and stuff from the path been worn down at the bottom. But that's the way it looks going in. Now, I want to talk to you about fixing chronology. As you see the date for that benchmark, 2141, is based upon fixing with the Pleiades and the star out. Now that, I drew a line to Bethlehem, but the descending passage that goes out goes to Alpha Draconis, and that crosshair determines the date 2141. There are other ways in which you confirm these dates in the pyramid so that you're not just sailing in the dark. Now, lots of people, and that's, again, one of the gripes I have with pyramid books, and it makes it hard to recommend them to you, is they'll go along, they'll tell you how to find one thing, then they'll state 10 other things but never tell you how they got that conclusion. They just expect you to believe them. I don't believe people that easily. If you want to really check out the pyramid, starting with the simultaneous alignment of Draconis, the dragon star, and Pleiades in Taurus, threw that in, with the unique scored lines in that passage, you have the dates lined up. But to check the accuracy of the pyramid that tells you by that lineup when the Exodus should take place, when Jesus was born, which is something I skipped over tonight, when Jesus died, what that date is in the 1500s AD when the lower passage turns horizontal, you've got to line up a lot of different criteria for determining chronology. There are seven systems of fixing dates, each of which can confirm or contradict and thus potentially deny any fixed date. Now, there's nothing sure, more sure, than the fixed positions of the heavenly bodies. You are citing a lineup so far out there that a hair will miss it. For example, 1 year either way. Turn the cooler down a little bit, Peter. 1 year either way. 2142 B.C. or 2140 B.C. and the light would not shine all the way down from that star. 1 year would make that much difference. Now, once that benchmark is fixed, you can't change the inches. Some pyramidologists have tried it. And they play games and they get all kinds of geometric designs. But the inches are there. They're fixed in stone. Nobody can say, well, it lost something in the translation. No, it didn't. It's still the same. Nobody can do with it what they can do. Come on by, Peter. It's okay. With the King James arguments that people give. There's only so many inches from that point to the opening, from that point to the floor line intersection of the ascending passages, from that point to where it turns horizontal going toward the pit. It's fixed. And that's why Isaiah 19 says that God in the last days will have an altar, and the altar is a witness altar. The two kinds of altars, a sacrificial altar and a witness altar, a testimony altar. The 12 stones the children of Israel put alongside the Jordan River and inside the Jordan River were testimonial witness stones as they moved into the Promised Land. The pyramid is to be a witness altar in the last days, and it will simply say, and for 1,000 years people will come during the millennium from all over the globe to Jerusalem. And there'll be a highway, interesting placement of a highway that doesn't exist now, from Assyria to Egypt. God will dry up certain water areas that block that path. The pyramid, perfectly aligned with Bethlehem, as we've seen, on the Christ angle, which I haven't explained yet, will be a witness that is, I told you so. It's God's, I told you so, I'm in control. And for 1,000 years, people will be forced to come and keep the Feast of the Tabernacles of Jerusalem, and the pyramid will be God's testimonial in stone. Now, those inches are fixed, clear and firm. You line up the scored lines with that tunnel, and that's your fixed starting point on the date. Once you get a feel for that, you can start doing it yourself. You're anxious for me to move on up into the King's Chamber? No, I'm not ready for that yet. I'm going to do some things with that date in the 1500s. This present evil world that's headed to the pit. I want many of my Jewish friends who listen to ask themselves some serious questions. Did the pyramid anticipate a sideways movement? And explain some of the things in the history of the Jews in that journey into the Queen's Chamber. I want you to feel confident that you know and are satisfied yourself whether a man could do this or whether some divine architect laid it out centuries ago. Now, in order to cross-check, you need to know the other 7 ways in which you cross-reference dates in history. I opened 2 hours ago reading from Rutherford, who said, many years ago, the pyramid fixed a date. Archaeologists, Bible historicists, Egyptologists are only now discovering and changing their traditional dates. And lo and behold, they're coming out exactly on the corner the pyramid had already laid down. Now that can only be proven when you learn the various crosshairs that zero in on a date. 7 of them. There are 7 ways in which you pinpoint dates in history. Now, Rutherford's, this book, most of it, that takes you through every year, is probably the most thorough study of those seven ways of confirming a date. Bible scholars for years, for example, have argued over the first year of Cyrus, and you that have listened to me preach at King's House One these years, where I preached on Ezra and Nehemiah and the prophets Haggai and Zechariah, know how important the first year of Cyrus' reign is. God, in the book of Isaiah, named Cyrus before he was born and called him his instrument. And in the first year of Cyrus' reign, the decree went out to rebuild Jerusalem. But there are two separate dates. One is the Babylonian, the other is the Persian. And if you don't know how to pinpoint it, it may seem like a small, irrelevant thing, just good enough for me, bless God, to know his first year of Cyrus' reign. But some agnostic comes along and points out to you, Cyrus was already reigning a year before that date rolled around. Oh, Bible's wrong. No, it isn't. And I'll show you why not. The 70 years of bondage has been a problem in many people's minds. There are at least four different references in Scripture to the 70 years that involve the Jewish bondage in Babylon. One has to do with the power of Babylon. One term is the day of Babylon, when Babylon will be in power in a specific 70-year period. Another reference has to do with the time they will spend in bondage. Another has to do with the desolation of the land. Now, only learning the seven criteria for determining dates to come up with the accurate one. And as you find in past historic dates that every crosshair comes right on with the pyramid, then you start saying, hey, wait a minute. Now, I've preached, I don't know how many weeks and months, years, God's in control, showing you that the Bible laid out the plan for the church ages. The Bible laid out the plan for world histories that grow out of Nebuchadnezzar. The Bible laid out the plan for a false church in its growth. The Bible for the assembling of the balance of power at the end of time.